a picture of my dad, but, oh, it's complicated. It could be important, Abby. I exhaled sharply. I never told Olivia who her father was. But one day, when she was in first, maybe second grade, she came home from school crying because she didn't have a dad. I framed this picture of my dad and told her it was her dad. It seemed to help, and she's had it here ever since. I stopped abruptly, not wanting to tell him who Olivia's father was. I was a coward, hiding like a rabbit in the woods. But all the fear and worry I'd been holding back was rushing in. Memories of Olivia's father's threats reawakened my deepest fears. Nobody would know she was his. I expected more questions, but Anthony didn't say a word. He slipped the contents of the broken frame and its torn picture in another plastic bag. Anthony studied me. "You look beat." "No, I'm fine," I said, even though I felt dangerously close to passing out. My body ached from my run, and I was basically surviving on alcohol fumes and short bursts of nightmare-riddled sleep. "Let me make you something to eat." "What?" I said, startled. "No, I'm okay. Come on." Anthony took my elbow and led me down the stairs to the couch, pressing me into its soft folds before he went to rummage around in the kitchen. I watched him, feeling disconnected from my old life, like I'd split in two and was walking in parallel lines. It felt weird, somebody in my house taking care of me. It had never happened before. I took care of Olivia, but there was nobody to care for me. Anthony pulled a package of dried pasta from the cupboard, along with a jar of Classico. He made us a simple pasta dish, then cut the mold off the edge of a block of cheese he found in the fridge and shredded it over plates piled high with steaming noodles and sauce. He quietly moved Olivia's school books from the dining room table to the kitchen counter. I turned my face away, unable to contemplate what it meant that we were moving her things, rearranging our lives. It was unbearably, intolerably sad. Anthony brought the plates to the dining room table and called me over. "It isn't gourmet or anything, but here you go," he said. I sat across from him and mumbled an awkward thanks. Part of me resented the fact that I had to eat, that I had to carry on at all. But the other part knew he was right. I had to keep my strength up for everything that lay ahead. We ate in silence for a few minutes, my first hot meal in weeks, the only sound the bloated rain beating against the window panes. Occasionally the wind howled, rattling the door, tree branches scraped against the side of the house. "My sister was murdered when I was in my first year of college." Anthony didn't meet my eyes, twirling the noodles on his fork. I stopped chewing, surprised at his candor. So that was why he looked so fractured. "I'm so sorry." "It was a long time ago." "Does it?" I swallowed hard, a balloon of sorrow swelling in my throat. "Get easier?" "Yes." "I know that sounds bad. I still miss her, and I often find myself thinking about her. But yes, it does. I was in college working toward my law degree when it happened. It took 15 years for the case to be solved. Every few years, the papers would run an anniversary story, or a new detective would call and ask a few questions." He exhaled heavily, blowing his floppy hair out of his eyes. "Sometimes I think it's a blessing that my mom has Alzheimer's. That sounds horrible, too. But my mom was tormented by what happened. My dad died of a heart attack a few years after. I know how hard it is, having all those questions and no answers. There's nothing worse than not getting closure." The house phone rang, and Anthony offered to get it. "No, it's okay," I said. "Probably just a reporter. They want their inside scoop." There had been a few other cases in Washington state where a pregnant woman in a coma had been kept alive until her baby was born, but never a teenager. Olivia's case had captured the attention of the media, but I didn't have the energy or headspace to answer their questions. I'd learned to be grateful I'd never become a journalist. I didn't care how much I loved a byline. I'd never have stalked someone in personal agony the way they stalked me. Fortunately, in the last couple weeks they'd eased off, heading in search of new stories. "I'll tell them to stop." Anthony scraped his chair back and picked up the phone. "Hello?" He waited a beat. "Hello?" He set the phone down. "There's nobody there." He sat down and we lapsed into silence again. We'd both finished our pasta when he spoke again. "We're going to find out what happened to your daughter. And one day, a few months from now, you'll have a beautiful baby to fill a piece of the hole that Olivia will leave. You can't stop living, Abby. You might as well be dead if you do." I understood now why he chose to work with those whose lives were tainted by tragedy. In some way, every time he helped somebody, every time he rescued them from their personal tragedy, he was recreating his own experience. He was mending the past. Maybe that's what I was doing too, giving myself and Olivia another chance.
Chapter 16. Olivia. June. I swam lazy laps back and forth across the school swimming pool. I swept my arms up and then down, pulling my body slowly through the water. The smell of chlorine was strong in my nose, the cool water slipping like satin around me. At the end of the lane, I crunched my body, lifted my feet, and spun underwater. My feet connected with the wall. I pushed off, arrowing my arms ahead of me. I pulled my right arm back and kicked, then bam, head up for my first breath and back down. This was what I liked about swimming, the rhythm of it, the consistency, the freedom. At its core, swimming was about me being free to be me. I didn't have to worry about all the shit outside. I knew this feeling would be ruined once I started competing again in the fall. Sometimes I thought about quitting. I just didn't want to let anybody down. My coach, my teammates, my mom. When I pulled myself out of the pool and draped my towel around my shoulders, I heard my text message indicator going off from my bag. I dried my hands and rummaged around for my phone. It was Aunt Sarah replying to my earlier text. "Hi, sweetie. What a lovely offer from my favorite niece. Yes, let's meet up today for a girly chat. What time are you free?" I typed a quick response. "Just finished swimming. How about now? I'll be home in 15. She replied right away. "Okay, see you then." I put my phone away and pulled my bracelet out of the safety compartment in my backpack, securing it around my wrist. Swimming was the only time I took my bracelet off. I didn't want the chlorine to ruin it. Then I headed toward the showers. I knew Mom would be gone for a couple hours. She ran the 8-mile beachfront loop every Saturday, so I had lots of time to get some answers from Sarah. I'd only just gotten home when I heard the crunch of tires outside. I threw open the door and stepped onto the front porch. The gravel in the driveway was pitted with dirty puddles. My aunt stepped carefully around them, trying to keep her white ballet flats clean. Her cropped tan pants and pink lace-edged Banana Republic top shouted suburban mom. "Hi," she waved enthusiastically. I waved back. Sarah was always overly cheerful and friendly. She was sort of the opposite of my mom. My mom's nice, it's just she's pretty shy. I always feel like I need to protect her a little bit. Sarah and I went to the kitchen and I sat in the breakfast nook which looked out over our backyard. It was slightly overgrown, a square of lawn bookended by rose bushes and lavender. The lonely weeping willow at the back sent tattered fronds chasing the air.
Your mom out for a run?
She asked. Every Saturday, I smiled.
So, what's up, sweetie? Is it a boy?
I almost rolled my eyes. Like I'd talk to her if I had boy problems. No, I said. That's not it. She set her massive mom purse on the kitchen island and leaned forward to smooth my hair behind my ears. Irritation sparked in me. Could nobody see I was 16, not 6? I took a deep breath and clasped my hands together on my lap, hoping Aunt Sarah would answer my questions. I didn't want to hurt Mom's feelings. There was just so much I wanted to know. Like, if my dad was actually alive. Growing up without a father had been hard. At Christmas, it was just Mom and me hovering around the corners of Sarah's house. And Father's Day was just code for fake day. Mom was always extra smiley, trying to make up for what I was missing. Madison said you couldn't miss someone you'd never met. But she was wrong. There was a giant, dad-shaped piece of me missing. I would never be whole if I didn't find out who he was. I can't get Mom to tell me anything, I began. That's why I'm asking you. I have a right to know, and I've found out some weird things, so I really want the truth now.
Okay.
This is going to sound totally random, but...
Olivia, out with it.
Is my father Gavin Montgomery? Sarah's eyes widened. Her upper body moved backward as if blown by a sudden wind.
Wow.
She laughed nervously, her eyes darting around the room.
Where is that coming from?
Will you just answer me?
Olivia, you know it's not my place.
Mom won't talk to me about it. We saw him on TV the other day, and I asked her about him, and she looked like she was going to faint, and then she told me she's never heard of him. He's a politician. Of course she's heard of him. She's lying about something.
Well, maybe there's a reason for that.
No good reason. I mean, all it does is make my imagination go crazy. Like, did he rape her? Am I that kid that came out of rape? Or is he you guys' long-lost brother and he molested her? Or did she, like, kidnap me? Or... Suddenly, I was so angry that this had been kept from me. I jumped to my feet, eyes blazing. Sarah shook her head and stood slowly.
Olivia, you're right. You're letting your imagination get away from you. Of course, she didn't...
Stop! I cut her off. I don't want to talk to you until you're honest with me. I'm sick of being lied to. And with those last hurtful words, I raced up the stairs and slammed the door to my room. I flopped on my bed, heart pounding wildly in my chest. I felt like it would crack open or burst into flame or explode into a thousand pieces. Only a couple minutes had passed when Sarah knocked softly on my door. She peeked her head in without waiting for me to answer.
Sweetie.
I sat up and pulled my knees to my chest and glared at her, stubbornly refusing to speak. She slid into the room, leaned her back against the wall. Her hair was in a ponytail, and she stretched both hands back to tighten it.
Listen.
She pulled a packet of cinnamon gum from her back pocket, popped a piece in her mouth, then offered me one. Sarah always had cinnamon gum with her. She'd been smuggling me pieces since I was a kid. My mom hated it, thought I'd choke or something. But I'd beg and beg, and eventually Sarah would give in. I ignored the gum. I'm already pretty sure he's my dad, so you might as well tell me the truth. I just want to know why Mom said he was dead.
I don't know.
I glared at her.
That's the truth. Your mom never told me. In fact, she'd kill me if she knew I was talking to you about this.
She let her legs fold and slid down the wall until she was sitting cross-legged on the floor.
Look, your mom was no angel in high school. I mean, she had a tough childhood, you know?
I nodded. Mom had told me how her mother left her on Sarah's doorstep, then went home and killed herself. It was, like, movie horrible.
Well, your mom had a bit of a reputation with guys. She went from one to the next and was a bit, you know.
She looked away, not wanting to say it out loud.
Easy?
I asked, shocked.
Yeah.
I shook my head, speechless. That didn't sound like Mom at all. She'd never even gone on a date in the whole time I'd been alive.
Don't judge her too much. She was extremely insecure and very, very vulnerable, and things were really tough for her. She was looking in the wrong place, but all she wanted was to be loved. Just after she graduated, she started seeing someone. She stopped hanging out with her friends and partying. I didn't know who he was because she kept it really quiet.
Sarah looked out the window and nibbled the edge of a fingernail. Finally, she dropped her hand into her lap and looked at me.
Listen, Olivia, are you sure you want to know this? Sometimes the truth isn't what you expect. You know, when I was in college, there was this experiment we did in one of my psychology classes where our teacher asked us what we'd prefer, happiness or truth. Most people chose happiness.
Not me, I said stubbornly. Besides, that's stupid. Truth brings happiness.
She shook her head. Not necessarily. In fact, sometimes it brings the exact opposite. Or the truth isn't even what you thought it would be. It just opens up a whole can of worms you wish you could shove back inside.
I clenched my jaw and wrapped my hands around my knees. I don't care, I said. I still want to know. Sarah sighed, resigned.
Well, like I said, your mom started secretly seeing this guy the summer after she graduated. One night I stopped by her work to give her a ride home and saw her get into someone's car. When they drove past me, I saw it was Gavin Montgomery.
Sarah unfolded her legs and crossed her ankles.
She dated him 2, maybe 3 months. Then, as suddenly as it began, it was over. He left Portage Point and never returned.
What I do know, Olivia, she fixed me with a flinty gaze,
is that your mom loves you and would do anything for you. If she hid who your dad is from you, she must have good reason for that. You should keep that in mind.
After Aunt Sarah left, I lay on my bed staring at the ceiling for a long time. A tiny spider was busy knitting a web in a corner of the ceiling. After a minute, it disappeared into a crevice. So many emotions jostled in me that I felt a bit sick. Gavin Montgomery was my dad. My mom had lied to me my entire life. Who cared why? My dad was alive. I'd been robbed of the chance to know him. I flopped onto my stomach and my eyes landed on a photo of my dad that Mom gave me when I was little. I picked up the picture from my bedside table, ran my fingers across the smooth wooden frame. I looked at the face of the man in the picture. He was in his 30s with blonde, thinning hair and light eyes. Deep dimples in both cheeks. He was looking just off camera, smiling at whoever was taking the picture. This was not Gavin Montgomery. The picture had probably come in the frame. An overwhelming sadness washed over me, and tears welled in my eyes, tumbling out of me like broken promises. I'd never physically had a father in my life, but I'd always thought I had this man, whoever he was. I felt like I was losing that now. I wiped my eyes, a sudden rising anger burning away the sadness. I sat up and lifted the picture and smashed it hard against my bed frame. The glass cracked but didn't shatter, so I flipped up the metal flaps at the back and lifted out the picture. Then I meticulously tore it into tiny pieces and stuffed it under my bed. Now I understood what Sarah had been telling me. Sometimes, even the truth was a lie.
Chapter 17. Abby, November. Olivia's hospital room was absolutely boiling. Her body no longer regulated her core temperature, so the heating was kept high, warming blankets tucked around her shrinking frame. Sarah and I shrugged out of our coats and hung them on the back of the door. One of the nurses peeked her head in the door. Her name tag said Katie. She was very young, almost a girl, with round, flushed cheeks, clear brown eyes, and mousy brown hair pulled into a tight bun. Everything about her screamed wholesome and sweet.
Dr. Maddox will be in to do the ultrasound in just a moment. She smiled, a dimple flashing in her right cheek, then disappeared.
13.5 weeks left until the baby would be born. I ticked every day off the calendar. One more day the baby was alive. And Olivia. Today, we'd find out the sex. Sarah flopped in a chair and flicked the TV on, finally settling on a return of Judge Judy. We watched as Judy berated a fat, bald man while a woman who looked like a truck stop hooker smirked at him.
You all right? I asked Sarah.
She sighed. We're having some problems with Dylan. I met his teacher this morning. He's having a hard time reading and writing. She thinks he's dyslexic. Surely they can't tell that at 8. Not definitively. She's giving me a heads up, though. Sarah glanced at the TV. Judge Judy had finished and the news was on. Senator Gavin Montgomery was speaking at a political rally in Seattle. He gestured wildly to a cheering crowd, just another politician on the campaign trail. Abby, she said, rubbing her eyes. The skin on her hands was covered with angry red patches. Her eczema was back. There's something I need to...
Afternoon, ladies.
Dr. Maddox entered the room, pushing a portable ultrasound machine. She flashed a warm, grandmotherly smile, her gray curls bobbing around a round face.
Look at you two, she scolded gently. Her accent dripped with the honey of the South. You both need a square meal on your bones. Promise me you'll go get a muffin after this. You need to keep up your strength.
Sarah and I exchanged smiles and promised. Now then, are you ready to see your grandchild? I nodded. Dr. Maddox positioned the machine next to Olivia's stomach, then pulled back the white sheet to expose the bump underneath. She squirted clear gel onto Olivia's belly. It made a hollow pht, pht sound. I watched the static on the screen blur in and out as Dr. Maddox looked for the best angle. My throat ached, and my eyes burned, and I realized I hadn't blinked in a long time. Finally, a black and white picture emerged. The rapid thud, 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 thud of a baby's heartbeat filled the room. And then I could see it, the pixels merging to show the life blossoming inside Olivia. A round head, a tiny nose, the silhouette of a face, a baby. There was a baby inside my baby. I gasped, and tears sprang to my eyes. An emotion I couldn't identify filled the hollow cavity of my chest, something with enough power to push the anvil of grief aside. The baby jerked, then rolled over, its tiny hands waving as if it knew we were watching. Look! I whirled to Sarah, who'd come around the foot of the bed to stand behind me. Sarah's eyes glistened like washed stones. It's beautiful,
For a moment, it felt wrong, this happiness. But I knew Olivia would be happy, too. So I let myself stand on that cliff and peer over the edge into the future at the happiness that I could have one day if I would only allow it.
See, she's sucking her thumb, Dr. Maddox pointed at the screen.
She? I asked.
It's a girl.
I grasped Olivia's hand tightly. Look, Liv, your baby's a girl. Dr. Maddox did some measurements and printed a picture for both Sarah and me, then wiped the gel from Olivia's stomach.
Everything looks great. She pushed her wireframe glasses up her nose. We'll ultrasound her every week or so, but right now the baby's healthy and growing well. She stood and shook my hand, then Sarah's.
Thanks, Dr. Maddox, I said.
Now then, she folded us into a cushiony embrace, smelling of apples and rain. You go get that muffin, all right now?
We will, Sarah promised.
Dr. Maddox waved goodbye and pushed the portable machine out of the room.
You okay? Sarah asked after a minute.
I'm scared, I admitted.
Letting myself love Olivia's child when there was no real guarantee that she would live was a massive risk. Loss, death, a broken heart, no matter how figurative, was unbearable. There was never a guarantee you wouldn't lose those you loved. But I knew it was a risk I had to take.
What if the baby dies?
I said. Sarah touched my hand. What if she doesn't? Just then, my phone rang, interrupting the moment.
I have to get this, I said. I'll meet you outside, okay?
I grabbed my coat and left before she could ask any questions. Night was creeping across the horizon. The rain had eased, leaving the air heavy and damp. I sat on a bench just kitty-corner to the hospital entrance and returned Anthony's call.
Hi, Abby. He greeted me. I got the DNA results back from the cigarette in Olivia's room. It's from Kendall Montgomery. Date of birth, May 1999.
I flashed back to seeing the text from Kay on Olivia's phone. Was K short for Kendall? And Montgomery? Could it be? I squeezed my eyes shut. Please don't tell me she's related to Gavin Montgomery.
I'm afraid so. How did you know?
Gavin Montgomery is Olivia's father. Fear tangled on my tongue. He told me to get an abortion, but I didn't. I never told him I kept Olivia. I think he has something to do with what happened to her.
Anthony blew out a low whistle. She must be about the same age as Olivia.
Why would a minor's DNA be in the system? I asked. My heart raced at all the possibilities.
I didn't exactly look in any criminal database, he admitted.
Then where?
All newborns in the U.S. are screened for genetic diseases by the National Newborn Screening and Genetics Resource Center. Washington State keeps DNA on file for 21 years. I gambled that the cigarette was either Olivia's or a friend's.
I pressed my fingers into my eyes until I saw white stars.
So Olivia knew Gavin's daughter?
What if she pushed Olivia?
We have no evidence of that. Only that they knew each other. If Gavin's daughter knew Olivia, then he probably knew her too.
Dread churned in me. I bent my head, my throat tightening like a fist. I had been weak. I hadn't spared Olivia the pain she didn't deserve, but had robbed her of a truth she did deserve. However hard it would have been to tell her about her father, to admit my own mistakes, I should have been honest. The truth had been mine to give.
What's next? I asked,
swiping at a tear.
We talk to Kendall, find out how she knew Olivia, if she knew Olivia was her sister, if they were together that night.
A dark, oily fear slithered over me at the possibility of seeing Gavin. I'd watched his meteoric rise in politics. At 34, he'd become the youngest ever senator in the Washington State Legislature. He was a darling of the Republican Party, much admired and well-liked. He had that effect on people, swept them up in his charm and convictions. But Gavin's cleverness and charisma went hand in hand with a darker side, one that only appeared in private. Those who crossed him were treated to intimidation, tirades, and when he was pushed hard enough, violence. I swallowed, hard bubbles of anxiety rising in my throat. But I couldn't hide anymore. The more I found out about Olivia's last months, the more certain I was that he had something to do with what had happened to her. Okay? When? I'm in court tomorrow, supporting one of my clients, and then at a support group I run in the afternoon, so tomorrow's difficult. We could talk to her together on Friday? Oh. Impatience and fear mingled in my throat. Anthony mistook my hesitation for disappointment. We could meet tomorrow night to figure out who we need to interview, he offered. I just won't be home until about 9. Why don't you come over? I'm in Queen Anne. I order a mean takeout. I could hear the smile in his voice, but my body stiffened with terror. I couldn't go to Seattle. But I could, I reminded myself. The reason I'd stayed away from Seattle was to protect Olivia from Gavin. But that wasn't necessary anymore. The revelation hit me. Vivid, intense, terrifying. We can always just meet on Friday. It's no problem, Anthony began. It's okay, I interrupted. I don't mind coming to you. Okay, great. He gave me his address, and I said, see you tomorrow, then hung up. See who tomorrow? Sarah's voice made me jump. Jesus, Sarah, you scared me. See who? Anthony. But why? She looked angry or sad. Sometimes it was hard to tell the difference with Sarah. I'm going to find out what happened to Olivia, I said. But the police, they're investigating, she said weakly. I rummaged in a hidden pocket of my purse for a long-forgotten pack of cigarettes and a lighter. I rarely smoked, hadn't for years because Olivia hated it so much. I lit the cigarette, the flame blazing brightly against the sky. I took a long drag, then exhaled slowly. Smoke twisted lazily up through the tree's stark branches, hanging momentarily with the last shriveled leaves of autumn. No, they aren't, I said. It'll just take some time. I sighed, irritation sparking in me, and told her about Tyler lying, the threatening picture texts, the note slipped under my door. She didn't speak for a long time, but when she did, it wasn't what I expected. I get that you think somebody pushed Olivia. Okay, but do you have to prove who? Looking for answers like this, it only distorts the truth. The truth about what happened and the truth about who Olivia was. It tricks you into thinking you have some control when you don't. I have to do this, Sarah. Why? I sucked on the cigarette, letting the smoke sear my lungs. Finally, I answered. I never knew why Mom killed herself. Sarah looked like I'd hit her. There was no note, no goodbye, nothing. I slashed my hand through the air. She killed herself, and I found her, and she didn't even say why. I've wondered my whole life, and I've never gotten any closure. I can't spend the rest of my life wondering what happened to Olivia. I need to know, for me, for Olivia's baby. A chill wind whipped off the water, and I pulled my scarf higher on my neck. Sarah zipped her coat up to her chin and sat heavily on the bench next to me. Here, give me one of those, she pointed at the cigarettes. I held the pack out, and she took one, bending forward so I could light it. We'd both struggled with the addiction off and on throughout our lives, but this was the first time we'd ever had a cigarette together. Sarah tucked her hair behind her ears. Even though she was 10 years older than me, my sister still had that natural girl-next-door look. Full lips, pale blonde hair, good skin. Only now was a lifetime of responsibility starting to show. Her skin puckering slightly at the corners of her mouth. Her eyes drooping at the corners. Sarah held the smoke in her lungs for a second, then released it into the frosty air.
"God, that feels good," she exclaimed. "It's pretty fucking cruel they don't let you smoke in the hospital. Don't they know that's exactly where you want to smoke the most?"
She examined her cigarette.
"I haven't had one in years."
"Me neither. Last time was when Olivia was 12. She'd just started her period, and I decided it was time to have the talk. I sneaked outside to have a smoke first, but she caught me, and man, did she lose it." I laughed at the memory. "She said maybe I didn't care about my life, but she did, and she wanted me in hers." The bittersweet aftertaste of the memory filled my mouth, and I wrapped my hands around my stomach. "I want her back." My voice strangled in my throat. Sarah put an arm around me.
"I know," she whispered. "Me too."
For just a moment, I allowed myself the luxury of closing my eyes and soaking up my sister's comfort. Then I imagined what it would be like if it were my mother comforting me. I pulled abruptly away from Sarah, wiping my eyes. Sarah stubbed her cigarette out on the ground, then set it on the bench between us.
"I have to tell you something."
She started again. Sarah picked something off her lip.
"Olivia called me a few months back and asked me to come over. Said she wanted to talk about her father. She said you'd been lying to her."
"What did you say?" I whispered, dread leeching into my heart. Her eyes dipped away from mine.
"I'm sorry. I've been trying to find a way to tell you."
"What did you say?"
I bit off each word.
Sarah finally met my eyes. She already knew.
"How?"
She wouldn't tell me how. She just said she already knew Gavin Montgomery was her father, and she wanted to know why you told her he was dead.
I gasped.
I had the sudden dizzying sensation that things were unraveling. I pressed my fingernails hard into my palms until they left deep half moons in my skin, trying to control my shaking hands.
Why didn't she ask me?
Are you kidding? She did ask you, like hundreds of times. But you wouldn't tell her the truth.
My head fell into my hands. The thought knotted and spun in my mind, making me dizzy.
"No, no, no," I moaned. A pale gray desperation hurtled through me.
"I'm sorry, Abby. I know you didn't want her to find out. But she had a right to know. You should have heard the things she was thinking."
I whirled on her and hissed,
"You stupid fucking bitch! You have no idea what you've done!"
Sarah recoiled, her face blanching white. I'd never sworn at her before, not even when I was a teenager. I wasn't the type who lashed out. I held everything in, kept it inside.
"I never told Gavin that I didn't get an abortion. If Olivia confronted him, if he saw her..."
I wrapped my hands around my throat, panic clawing at me. Gavin wasn't somebody to mess with.
"If he knew she was his daughter, there's no telling what he might have done."
Chapter 18. Abby. November. It was a monumental battle of willpower over fatigue to pull my running shoes on, but I knew I needed to do it. It was the best way to rejoin the living. It was still dark when I slammed the door shut behind me and headed into the chill of the early morning fog. My shoes thumped heavily along the pavement, my arms pumping
and I let my mind drift. Olivia had known who her father was.
Fury at my sister ground inside of me. Blame lay heavy as a brick on my heart, festering, ready to be propelled at somebody at the first provocation.
Maybe she'd confronted him.
Maybe he'd been the one sending her those pictures. Maybe he'd hurt Olivia, followed through on the threat he'd made 18 years ago. I couldn't push aside the niggling seed of worry that he had something to do with her fall. Nor could I stop blaming Sarah for handing Olivia the tools to find him. I'd first met Gavin Montgomery at the ice cream shop where I worked the summer I graduated. I knew his girlfriend, Cassandra Winters. She was a few years ahead of me in school, the bubbly, popular prom queen, rich parents, a giant McMansion home. Everyone knew she was dating a hot college boy from Seattle. I'd seen them together around town, so the first time he came into the ice cream shop and asked for a scoop of vanilla in a cup, I knew who he was. When he started coming in regularly, I couldn't help but feel special. I was savvy enough to know he wasn't just there for the ice cream. The memory was bitter, like vomit in my mouth, but I let it sweep over me. The bell above the door of the ice cream shop jangled. "We're closed," I shouted, not looking up from mopping the sticky floors.
"Glad to hear it."
The voice was deep, throaty, obviously older. I jerked my head up. It was Gavin. "Back for another scoop of the world's most boring ice cream?" I teased. Gavin threw his head back and laughed. "You're funny, Abby. And no, I didn't come for ice cream." He crossed to stand in front of me. He was so tall, I felt like a child in comparison. There was something inherently powerful about him. He filled the room. It was a little intimidating. But the way he was looking at me. I set the mop against the wall and cocked one hip, smirking. "You really need to try something besides vanilla." He quirked an eyebrow. "Maybe I will," he said, moving closer still. "I couldn't get you out of my mind."
"You must not have much going on in there, then. Even less than I have in mine. I'm just a boring teenager from Portage Point."
"You don't give yourself enough credit. You're gorgeous, and I'm sure very clever."
"You sound like my big sister." "You're so clever, Abby. Why don't you study law?"
I imitated her voice, and he laughed.
"Do you want to be a lawyer?"
"No, not really. My sister just wants me to because it's a steady job."
"And what do you want?"
I shrugged and reached for the mop,
continued swooshing it across the floor. I wanted what most girls wanted, to be loved. He closed the distance between us, his mouth landing hard on mine. It surprised me, sending the mop clattering to the ground. But I didn't push him away. His hot hands circled my waist, burning the skin under my shirt.
"Wait." I grabbed his hands and tugged him out of sight into the back office, where the coins and bills from the till were still scattered across the desk. His fingers tangled in my hair as we kissed, then dipped under the elastic of my skirt. He was rock hard against me. I undid his belt and lifted my skirt to rub against him. Suddenly he flipped me over so I was bent over the desk. I pulled my panties down and reached between my legs, guiding him inside of me. I felt a secret thrill. I was having sex with Cassandra Winters's boyfriend. Money and security weren't everything after all. I had power, too. After that, we met maybe once a week. Sometimes after I'd closed the shop. Sometimes at the beach. The only rule was that I wasn't allowed to contact him. He promised to break up with Cassandra, but he had to wait because her grandfather had just died. One night after I locked up the shop, he was there, leaning against his car and smiling that devilish smile. "Picnic on the beach?" He lifted the wicker basket he was holding. We drove to the far end of the beach, then hiked to a secluded spot where the sand dove into a tiny tree-lined cove. He spread a pale yellow blanket on the ground and kissed me as he laid me down. Shivers dusted my head,
splashed between my thighs. A full moon lit a silver path across the dancing waves, and the water caressed the shore at our feet. I knew then I was in love with him. But by the time I found out I was pregnant, everything had fallen apart. I knew things about him, what he was capable of, how far into the darkness he'd go for his career. Still, I waited outside the golf club, catching his eye from the edge of the parking lot as he walked to his car. Despite everything, I hoped he'd do the right thing. At his car, he grabbed my arm roughly and pushed me inside.
"What are you doing here, Abby?" he growled. "I told you, I contact you."
"I had to talk to you," I said urgently.
"Why?"
"Gavin, I'm pregnant."
Gavin looked shocked. Then panic rolled across his handsome features. He looked like a cornered animal.
"I thought you were on the pill."
"I am."
"Fuck."
He clenched and unclenched his fists, his face hard.
"Take care of it."
He leaned over me and pushed the door open.
"I can't get an abortion," I exclaimed,
ignoring the door.
"What kind of mother do you think you'd be?" he sneered. "You're anxious and unstable. You serve ice cream for a living, and you still live in your sister's house. You can't take care of a baby. You're a pathetic mess."
I stared at him, stunned. It was everything I'd ever thought about myself, right out there in the open. "But an abortion?" I opened my mouth to argue, but Gavin grabbed my face in one hand, pinching it so hard that tears filled my eyes.
"Do you understand how much this could fuck everything up?" he snarled. "I could be senator one day, maybe even governor, and I won't let a bitch like you ruin it. Not now, not ever."
He shoved my face away and pulled a checkbook out of his blazer's inner pocket. He wrote a check and handed it to me. I took it, unsure what else to do.
"I'm not kidding, Abby. I will kill you and that baby if you ruin this for me."
He leaned over me and opened the door. And this time I got out. I went to the abortion clinic, like I was told. But I looked at the other girls around me and didn't see myself in them. And I couldn't go through with it. I'd lived with my mom's abandonment since I was 10. This was my chance to do better than she did. But I also couldn't have Gavin find out. I'd seen what his threats did to others. I knew what happened when you crossed him. So I cashed that massive check. It was completely dishonest, but I took his money and let him think I'd gotten an abortion. Instead, I used it to go to college, buy a house. I raised my daughter, my daughter, to be a good girl, because bad things didn't happen to good girls. And that was the truth I'd hidden from Olivia, at least part of it. I'd taken blood money to get rid of my baby and then lied about it. Gavin had paid me to eliminate my daughter, and then he disappeared from our lives. He'd abandoned me, and he'd abandoned her, and it rankled on a deep level. Maybe because I knew the pain of being abandoned by a parent. I knew what it felt like to be deserted by the person you should be able to count on no matter what. I knew better than most. Which was why what I did to Olivia was far worse than what he did. When I got home from my run, a massive box was sitting on my porch. It was about 3 feet by 3 feet, my name and address typed neatly on the label. I maneuvered the bulk awkwardly through the door and set it next to the dining table, bewildered. I slit the top and peered inside. Nestled in white styrofoam was an exquisite, pure white orchid. The delicate fragrance, light and sweet, floated up to me. I carefully pulled the pot out of the box, and a small white envelope fell out. The card inside read, "Wishing you courage and strength. Please know that we are here any time you need us. Lizzie and Kelly."
I stroked the velvety leaves of the orchid, the unexpected kindness causing a sharp stinging in my chest. I thought of how I'd kept myself apart from these women for so long. In fact, when I analyzed my own behavior, I realized I'd denied myself everything. The anticipation of a date, laughter over coffee, the blur of a shot of tequila on a night out. And for what? Olivia would have wanted me to have a life. She wouldn't have begrudged me that. I did it because I was scared of rejection, of loss, of hurt, of being anything other than Olivia's mom. It shocked me to realize that was all I thought of myself as, Olivia's mom. I'd gotten pregnant so young that I never had a chance to find out who Abigail Knight was. I'd been thrust without warning into a very adult world without ever finishing being a kid. Everybody around me had sharply forged personalities, but I didn't even know who I was without my daughter. Somewhere along the way, I'd lost myself. I looked at my watch. I'd seen Lizzie picking up her daughters from the high school. Maybe I could catch her and say thank you. It wasn't too late for that. And maybe I'd see Tyler as well. I parked across the street from the high school and slammed the car door just as the tinny sound of a bell jangled from the school building. It was a beautiful day, a cloudless turquoise sky shimmering above me. But the wind was sharp, gusting across the parking lot and slicing through my wool coat. Chills chased across my skin, and I tucked my chin deeper into my scarf. Students flooded onto the manicured lawn that circled the front of the school. I scanned the crowd for Tyler, then Lizzie, then Kelly, but didn't see any of them. After a few minutes, the parking lot was mostly empty. Disappointed, I turned to go, but just then I spotted Tyler halfway across the parking lot. Poor kid. Agony was stamped indelibly on his body, weighted across the miserable hunch of his shoulders. He looked smaller somehow, shrunken, the way a grape shrivels into a raisin. I jogged toward him, but he must not have heard me calling his name, because he jumped when I touched his shoulder, his eyes wide, keys held out as if fending off an attacker. "Tyler, hi," I said, breathless from my sprint. "Oh, Miss Knight, hi." He wiped a hand over his face, then darted a glance back at the school. "Do you have a second?" "I guess." I fell into step beside him, our shoes crunching on the gravel. "You said you didn't see Olivia after the barbecue," I said. The words came out sounding like an accusation, and Tyler's eyes immediately went flat and defensive. "Yeah, so?" "Well, I loosened my scarf. "It's just, I found Olivia's phone the other day, and there was a text on it from you. It said you were going to meet later that night. Did you?" "No." We'd reached his car, a flashy red Jeep Renegade. Olivia had gushed about that car when they first started going out together. The alarm chirped twice as Tyler unlocked it and opened the driver's door. My hand shot out to stop him. I grasped his arm, my nails digging into his bicep. "Her text said you did." "I didn't see her, Miss Knight." Tyler's voice was sharp as a paper cut. He wrenched his arm away from me, his eyes hot and red. "She texted me about meeting up, all right? She said she was coming back to the barbecue, but she never showed up. I thought she'd fallen asleep or something."
"What time did you leave?"
"Like midnight?" "That's what I told the police, too." Tyler wiped a forearm across his eyes. His face was haggard, the freckles spattering the bridge of his nose standing out starkly against the paleness. I stepped away from Tyler, and he climbed into his Jeep, slamming the door. He rolled his window down and looked at me for a long moment. I held his gaze, waiting for whatever it was he wanted to say. "The police said it was an accident," he said finally, "that she slipped. That's what happened, right?"
"Yes, of course." My voice sounded anemic, pitiful. "I just, you know, I wanted to see if you knew anything else."
"I don't," he said. He
He wiped a hand across his nose. A thin trail of snot still hung off it. Did she really say I was too strict? That she felt like I was writing the script for her life? I asked. He looked away. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have told you that. Did she say it? Yeah. I backed away from him, wanting more than anything to be in the comforting, solitary confinement of my car. Bye, Tyler. I spun around, walked away, my legs leaden. Wait, Miss Knight? Tyler called after me. Have you talked to Madison? I turned around. Not yet, I said slowly. Why? Madison and Olivia weren't talking. They had a big fight, like, a couple months ago. Madison was such a bitch to Olivia. She's the one you should be talking to. Tyler started up his car and pulled away. I don't know how long I stood there in that spot. The parking lot as empty as a promise. Back in my car, my mind raced, trying to catalog everything I'd learned. Olivia knew she was pregnant. She knew Gavin was her father. She'd met Gavin's daughter. She and Madison weren't speaking. I couldn't find any logical connection between these strands. How did they lead to my daughter's fall? I drove slowly through town, hugging the beach as I wound along the road that led to my house. It was low tide, Puget Sound pulling away into the distance. The water was gunmetal gray, dappled with boulders and chunks of seaweed. Cotton wool clouds hung low in the sky, threatening to burst at any moment. My cell phone rang, and I glanced at it. It was Sarah. I pressed end, unable to talk to her just yet. I was still furious with her for keeping the fact that Olivia knew about Gavin from me. Instead, I called Anthony. I just talked to Tyler, I said when he answered. He said Madison and Olivia had fought and weren't talking. Interesting. Did he say why? No. We need to talk to Madison, see what happened. If the fight was motive enough for her to hurt Olivia. I could easily imagine Madison getting angry and freezing Olivia out for some perceived wrong. But hurting her? I wasn't so sure, and I said as much to Anthony. You could be right, but we should talk to her anyway, he replied. If there's one thing I've learned in my job, it's that everybody, no matter how harmless they seem, has the capacity to veer outside the lines. It's just a matter of how far they go.
Chapter 19. Olivia. June. Ding! The end-of-school bell rang shrilly. Everybody in history class leapt up and started talking, an excited hum of teenage chatter. Finally! No school for 3 months. I slammed papers and books into my backpack and slung it over my shoulder.
Hurry up, Liv, Tyler urged. Let's get out of here. I want to go to the beach.
About that, I began, but didn't get a chance to finish. Dan appeared in the classroom doorway and pointed at Tyler with both hands.
Dude, he shouted. I have a volleyball with your name on it. Let's get to the beach. We're going to kick some ass.
Tyler gave him a high five, and they walked down the hall together. Dan didn't even look at me. I trailed after them in the direction of our lockers, feeling inexplicably snubbed. Tyler used to stick next to me like glue. He'd open doors for me and sling my backpack over one shoulder while his was over the other. Dan was such an asshole. I was sure this was his fault somehow. All anybody was talking about was the annual after-school beach party. Usually we'd all play volleyball and laze about on the beach, waiting to see who was brave enough to go in the water first. Then someone would spark up the barbecue, and we'd eat ribs and chicken before starting the bonfire and making s'mores. Mom always hated it when I stayed out after dark, like all the bad things in the world only happened after the sun went down. But just so she didn't worry, Madison and I usually headed to my house around sunset for movies and a sleepover. But this year, I had a handful of lies ready to get out of the beach party. What I was really doing was going to see Kendall. We'd been messaging each other on Facebook lately. I opened my locker and shoved loose papers, plastic bags, a few apple cores, a hairbrush, my locker mirror, and a pair of tennis shoes into my backpack. By the time I finished, Dan had disappeared and Tyler was waiting for me at the other end of the hall. When I reached him, he put an arm around my shoulders and pulled me against him. I wanted to shrug him off. It felt like we were about to run a three-legged race or something. Outside, the sun was shining brightly, making everything look sparkly and beautiful. June was the best month in the Pacific Northwest. The weather was just warming up. New shoots pressed through the ground, and vibrant green leaves unfurled on the trees. The scent of spring roses mingled with the salty sea air. In the next few weeks, Portage Point would fill with tourists, the ice cream shops heaving with people, the beach thronged with sun worshippers. Traffic through town would become a nightmare, with horns blaring and sunburned people jostling for space on the sidewalks. But for now, it was still peaceful, the sky scrubbed clean by occasional showers. "You all right?" I asked Tyler as we headed toward the front of the school. He'd been really weird lately. Not that I could blame him. Rumors were flying about exactly why his parents broke up, and he was totally pissed about it. Madison had told me that Peter told her that Tyler's dad had walked in on his mom and the mailman having sex in their bed. Ew. I was too scared to ask Tyler if it was true, though. He'd go totally apeshit.
Actually,
He lowered his voice and leaned closer.
I wanted to tell you something.
Tyler dropped his backpack on the ground, and I sat on a bench in front of the school. Tyler turned to face me. He had a weird look in his eyes. He reached down to pick a long piece of grass, which he started tying in knots that kept breaking.
I'm not going to be around for the summer,
he said finally. What? I blinked. Why not?
My stupid parents.
The amber flecks in Tyler's eyes sparked with anger. His hands curled into fists.
My dad's moving to Seattle, and apparently I have to go with him.
But I couldn't think of anything to say.
Why?
Dad said he mostly works there, so he might as well move there. And apparently he's got summers with me in the custody agreement. I'm not sure who's more pissed off about it, me or him.
Tyler's nostrils flared. Are you coming back?
Yeah. I'll be back at the end of August for football. Mom gets me during the school year. Dad gets me one weekend a month and summers.
Tyler's dad was some senior, high-up manager at an IT firm in Seattle, but he'd worked from Portage Point as long as I could remember. I didn't know him very well. He seemed nice enough. A quiet, bookish type shaped like a turnip, with a shy, lopsided smile. When do you go?
Monday.
His jaw worked furiously, but he shrugged.
Whatever. At least I don't have to be with her all summer. This is all her fault for cheating.
Hey! Madison appeared suddenly from behind me. She flopped onto the bench with a loud huff, throwing her bag on the ground dramatically. Hey, I replied. I turned back to Tyler, but he obviously didn't want to talk about it anymore because he quickly changed the subject.
Do you want to get something to eat at Bagel Barn before we head to the beach?
He asked. Oh, shoot, I forgot to tell you, I said, smacking my forehead. I have a dentist appointment in just a bit, so I'm going to miss the beach party, I'm sorry.
What?
Madison exclaimed, her eyes wide and horrified.
Since when?
Like yesterday? My tooth has been bothering me. I poked at a molar and made a face. I have to get a filling, I think. Today was the only time they could fit me in. It amazed me how easily the lies flowed off my tongue. The easiest way to tell a lie, I was learning, was to add in a drop of truth. My tooth did hurt, and I would make a dentist appointment. Adding that to the lie made it even more believable. Well, that's shit, she huffed. The barbecue's gonna be lit. Peter arrived then, and she was instantly distracted. She gazed up at him adoringly, then stretched a foot out to touch his. He smiled and sat next to her, looping an arm around her shoulders and pulling her close. She leaned in to kiss him and murmured something in his ear with a girlish giggle. I watched them for a moment, realizing that I'd never seen Madison like a guy for this long before. Maybe she was actually serious about Peter.
When am I going to see you then?
Tyler asked, throwing down the frayed and tattered piece of grass. For just a moment, he looked vulnerable and needy. But then he shifted his body, and the sun slid away, turning his eyes dark and shadowy. How about Sunday? My mom will be home, but we could go somewhere if you want.
What, you think she'll let you?
He asked sarcastically. He reached down and picked up another piece of grass and blew into it, making a high, sharp sound. I ground my teeth. She just worries, I said stiffly.
Whatever,
he muttered. He ripped the grass in half and tossed it on the ground at my feet before turning and storming toward his car. I said goodbye to Madison and Peter and sneaked around the back of the school to a neighborhood side street. Derek was waiting in his Mustang, and I slipped in, throwing one last look behind me. Madison and Tyler would kill me if they saw me now, after all my lies. Derek gunned the engine, and we headed toward Seattle. I slouched low in the car so nobody could see me and didn't say anything until we reached the freeway. How come you don't go to UW? I asked Derek. I'd been wondering it for weeks now. He blew a lock of hair off his forehead and looked like he was debating saying something.
It's complicated,
he finally said. Try me.
Well, I want to go to art school.
He glanced at me. Why don't you then?
Mom and Dad won't pay for it.
But why not? I asked, baffled. Don't they want you to be happy?
I guess. It's just they want me to do something that I'm guaranteed to get a job in, like finance. Dad says art is a waste of money. Mom, I mean...
He downshifted the Mustang to exit the highway.
You know her. She's in her own world. But I'd rather die than waste away in some office and become a middle-class dillhole like my parents.
What kind of art would you study?
I like drawing.
I pondered that. I hadn't pegged Derek as the creative type. But now that he mentioned it, I remembered loads of times when he'd sat around doodling while Madison and I played. Would you draw me? He glanced sideways at me, his eyebrows high.
Sure,
he grinned.
One day I'll draw you.
We pulled into Kendall's Mercer Island neighborhood and parked in a slot across the street from Starbucks, where I'd organized to meet Kendall. This little alcove of Seattle was home to the wealthy and affluent. Behind the ironwork fences and guarded gates, another world existed that even Derek hadn't been exposed to. Here in Kendall's world, Mercedes-Benzes and Lexuses parked in cavernous garages. Paid staff maintained swimming pools and hot tubs. It was a world I knew nothing about, and it made me extremely uncomfortable.
Nice.
Derek whistled softly as a Ferrari rolled by. Look, there she is. I pointed across the street to where Kendall was chatting to a teenage girl who looked vaguely familiar. They were with a man and woman I'd never seen before, all of them holding venti iced coffees. Derek and I got out of the car and jogged across the street. Hi. I smiled at Kendall as we approached. Kendall jumped and whirled to face us. Oh, She stammered. Oh, my God! The girl next to her shrieked, grabbing Kendall's arm. She gaped at me. I couldn't tell if she was grinning or leering.
It's your twin!
I suddenly knew where I recognized her from. She'd been with Kendall the day we met at the University of Washington. She was one of those spoiled-looking rich girls, long, bottle-blonde hair, a boob-clinging top, thick layers of mascara, skinny jeans, and too high heels. The girl noticed Kendall's shocked gaze.
Wait.
She turned to me.
Are you stalking Kendall?
She turned to the older couple next to her.
We saw this girl, like, months ago at UW. Do you know each other?
Kendall's face froze. No, of course not. She offered me her hand. I shook it dumbly.
It's nice to see you again,
she said primly. A politician, just like her dad.
I hope you enjoyed UW.
And before I knew what was happening, she was gone, whisked away by the rich girl and her parents. I cried the whole way home, sniffling as I stared out the window. The rejection was like acid in my stomach. I didn't know what I'd done wrong. Derek, obviously,